My guest today on Meet the Press is Joseph Califano, Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, the largest of all government departments. Mr. Califano, recently a corporate lawyer, once served as a high-level assistant to President Lyndon Johnson. Mr. Secretary, starting with welfare, is the reform plan you're working on for welfare going to help the taxpayer or just the welfare recipient?
Well, I hope it will help both over the long haul. We're looking at a lot of options. It's not clear what the precise boundaries of that proposal will be. I think one aspect of it that is clear to me is that the welfare proposal will have a major and significant and meaningful training program for mothers of children who are on AFDC instead of the inadequate training program now, so that they can ultimately go to work when their children go to school in meaningful jobs.
A question on education. You have endorsed quotas, preferential hiring, preferential admission of women and minority students to colleges. What happens to the right of the white male now trying to get into college not to be discriminated against by race or sex?
I believe that the whole college and higher educational experience will be enhanced for whites and blacks and women and other minorities if there are minorities and women in our major institutions. I also believe that as a society, we have a constitutional, if you will, and moral obligation to encourage and give, if necessary, some preferential treatment to minorities. Otherwise, they'll never be in the power elite of doctors and scientists and lawyers and nuclear physicists in this country as they should be.
Let me try that question again. What happens to the right of the white male not to be discriminated against by race or sex?
I don't think this involves a reverse discrimination, if you will, against the white male. I think he will have his full opportunity. I think that the white males who go to colleges, who are the vast and overwhelming, the white males and females, the vast and overwhelming college population, will have a more enriched experience. And I think we have to recognize as a society we've got to make up for a century of brutal discrimination.
You anticipate preference for some groups without discrimination to other groups?
I think, yes, that's correct. I think that we can have preferences, and I do not think it constitutes reverse discrimination in any constitutionally or legally offensive way.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Our reporters on Meet the Press today include Nancy Hicks of the New York Times, David Kraslow of Cox Newspapers, and Carol Simpson of NBC News. We'll continue the questions for Secretary Califano with Ms. Hicks.
Hello, Secretary Califano. Getting back to the question of preferential admissions, how do you think you're going to make that concept fly in this political atmosphere?
Well, I think the concept will fly if the leaders of this country will recognize that that there has to be some kind of affirmative programs in order to encourage and then get minority students into our major institutions. We propose, for example, in the Carter budget this year, a $4 million program designed to identify bright minority students, hopefully in the senior high school level, provide them the wherewithal to go to the best colleges and universities and then the best graduate schools in this country. Now, we're in the process of identifying bright people all over this country for a variety of things, and we can do that.
Okay, getting back to the question of welfare reform, do you think that the negative income tax concept, which had was discussed a lot at the beginning of this decade, is viable on the Hill at this point in time?
I don't know whether it's viable on the Hill or not, and I don't know whether what we will propose ultimately and recommend to the president will involve a negative income tax. There are a wide variety of ways to deal with this problem.
But you have less than 45 days to come up with a plan. Do you not know what basic approach you're going to take yet?
I think it's fair to say that the basic approach is still wide open. There are several options, and we have not selected one yet.
Mr. Kraslow?
Mr. Secretary, to paraphrase rather pointedly a question that many, many people are now asking in the wake of the ban on saccharin, why is it in the government's eyes all right to smoke cancer but not to eat cancer? Why is a warning label sufficient for tobacco and not for saccharin?
I think that question should be addressed to the Congress. The Food and Drug Administration does not have authority over cigarettes and smoking. It is not, by law, considered a drug or a food or a cosmetic over which they have any control.
But you are the man in charge of the government's health programs. Don't you have a point of view on this?
I have a point of view on cigarette smoking. As an ex-smoker, I realize how difficult it is to quit. It's obviously one of the major causes of bad health, heart attacks, lung cancer, and other circulatory and respiratory disease in this country. Cigarette smoking is a killing habit. Now, whether or not this country is prepared to make a judgment that cigarette smoking is illegal is a major issue, and I would doubt that that would make any sense. Perhaps it should be made more expensive, but I don't see any point in making cigarette smoking illegal.
Well, if it doesn't make any sense for tobacco, why does it make sense for saccharin?
I think a ban on cigarette smoking is unenforceable, if you will. As to saccharin itself, Mr. Kreslow, I've got to tell you, I have personally disqualified myself in the saccharin case because I represented Coca-Cola as a private attorney. As to the Delaney Amendment, which requires action in this area or in the area of foods that cause cancer, we are now at HEW examining whether or not any changes are warranted. And if there are any changes warranted, we will be forthcoming to the Congress with recommendations. It's by no means clear that a change in the law is warranted, however.
Ms. Simpson?
Mr. Secretary, this past week in Clinton, Massachusetts, President Carter told a meeting of people that you were doing everything possible within the law to avoid federal funding of abortions. Could you tell us specifically what you are doing?
Well, we are the issue of whether or not federal Medicaid funds should be used for abortions is now in the courts. We are under an injunction prohibiting a congressional amendment from becoming effective. That amendment would prohibit the use of federal funds for abortions in the Medicaid program. So at the present time, since a court order says that that amendment cannot take effect, federal funds are being used in Medicaid to pay for abortions. What we are doing is trying to put together the most effective array of alternative programs to abortions that we can, increasing our family planning, increasing our research by $5 million this year in what we called healthy child research to try and make sure that as many fetuses as we know as much about the fetus as we can, increasing our assistance to teenage mothers, increasing sex education programs.
About your abortion position, and of course we know the issue is ultimately going to be decided by the courts, but are you not discriminating against poor women who, without Medicaid-funded abortions, would be forced to bear children they may not want, who are going to end up further burdening your department through aid to dependent children payments and so forth?
I do not think we are discriminating against poor women. I realize that women who have the funds can obtain abortions even if the federal government does not pay for them. As you know, the president, throughout the campaign repeatedly, and I in my confirmation testimony and since then, have indicated that we believe strongly that federal funds should not be used for abortions. I have never known a woman who wanted an abortion or who was happy about having an abortion. I think it's our role to provide for those women the best we can in terms of family planning services, of daycare centers for their children, of health, prenatal services to make sure children are born healthy, and of all the decent things in life that every child in this country deserves, whether it's health care or a clean home or a decent schooling, and we'll do our best to do that.
Mr. Secretary, during the campaign, President Carter spoke out in favor of a separate Department of Education, taking the Department of Education away from HEW and making it a separate department. A good many educators, a good many senators and congressmen believe in that approach. Are you going to oppose that?
I was not elected, Mr. Monroe, or President Carter was, and I will obviously, if he wants to press hard for a separate Department of Education, I will do that. Also, as you know, I have written about this subject prior to serving in the Carter administration. I think that education needs to be more closely related with health and other social services, and would prefer to see a department within a department, if you will, or a division within a department, essentially as it now is. For example, in the immunization area, when I was a young student, I got my immunization in the school system. That's not done anymore today. One of the things we hope to do, and one of the things the president has asked me to look at, is whether or not we can restore that relationship between education and health.
You had a huge department, something like a $146 billion budget, bigger than the Pentagon. And many educators feel that education gets smothered in this department. The former secretary of HEW, Senator Ribicoff, now in the Senate, has a bill with 29 sponsors, I believe, to separate education from your department. And he says that the HEW secretary is forever putting out fires on welfare, Social Security, or maybe saccharin. How often, according to Mr. Senator Ribicoff, can he deal with education or speak for it? We need a Secretary of Education, he says, for that. Why isn't education important enough to have its own cabinet department?
Mr. Monroe, it's not a question of how important education is. And I also think, I think Senator Ribicoff is one of the most thoughtful men in the Congress on problems of government organization, and he sat where I'm sitting now. Of that 140-plus billion-dollar budget, all but about $17 billion are automatic payout programs. The vast bulk of that budget is Social Security in the Social Security Administration. I think that from a presidential point of view, it is important that social and human services be closely related. And I think that that they can be closely related. I think we are giving a great deal of attention to education, to the $9-plus billion in our education budget. And education was a major part of the reorganization that we announced last week.
Have you and President Carter talked since inauguration about whether education should be split off?
No, not in specific terms. What we have talked about are the first steps, namely to get the programs that are there working as effectively as possible and get them consolidated in one place. I moved a piece of an education program that was in the health area, a program to provide loans and grants to medical students, into the Office of Education and consolidated the student loans under which we had control. I would think that another step that should be taken in the future is to get the other education programs scattered around the government, other loan student loan programs, a half a dozen or so at least, in other departments of the government, folded into the Student Assistance Bureau we've now created in HEW.
Ms. Hicks?
Fine. Mr. Secretary, did you seek to hinder a fraud investigation within your department of a health program in California as your critics on Capitol Hill have charged? The issue seems serious enough, at least for the time being, to hold up the confirmation of Hale Champion as Undersecretary.
Ms. Hicks, I did not in any way hinder or impede any fraud investigation. Indeed, and nor did Mr. Champion in California or elsewhere. Everything that I've done in this area has been designed to make those investigations go faster and better. The reason I called in the head of the Office of Investigations in HEW was twofold. One, to make certain that the investigation in California is going ahead full blast, because the situation out there is serious. And secondly, to make certain that investigators in our department work closely with lawyers, both to preserve the constitutional rights of people being investigated in all investigations, and secondly, to make certain that the data and the procedures by which data is gathered are done in a way so that there can be successful prosecutions. We've been through 4 or 5 years in this country of incredible exposures about investigations and investigators going unattended by professionals very sensitive to human rights.
Is Mr. Champion's nomination in trouble?
No. Mr. Champion's nomination is not in trouble in any sense from the senators on that committee that I've talked to. I'd also like to note that we've combined Medicare and Medicaid in order to give us a better opportunity to root out fraud. I have strongly and personally went to Capitol Hill to support H.R. 3 to make it a felony for people to steal the people's money, which is what happens when Medicaid is defrauded. And finally, we are I've talked to Attorney General Bell just in the last few days, and we are going to put FBI agents full blast into Medicare and Medicaid fraud investigations until we can get our Office of Investigations and HEW up to full speed.
Mr. Craslow?
Mr. Secretary, let me take you back to where you don't want to be, the saccharin issue. I hear what you're saying, but I find it difficult to grasp the logic. You have severed your relationship with the Coca-Cola company, which, as I understand it, never did involve saccharin. You have severed your relationship with your law firm. You have now taken an oath of public office. What is wrong with taking a position on this question?
Mr. Craslow, we will be taking a position on the larger question of the Delaney Amendment. As far as saccharin was concerned, my feeling was that since I've only severed those relationships during the past 2 months, that I should disqualify myself from a matter which is of tremendous importance to the Coca-Cola company and the soft drink industry, and a matter on which I have had, if not discussions with the government, I've certainly discussed with the top executives of the Coca-Cola company, so I thought I should not personally become involved in it. It's much more a matter of appearance than it is a fact. I agree with you completely.
Well, if you follow that logic through, you also represented a major pharmaceutical house. Does this mean that you're going to remove yourself from any question involving enforcement of drugs?
No, of course not. This happened to be an issue of great concern to this company, and one coming close on the heels of my severing my relationship with them. And that's why I thought in terms of appearances, it would be better for me not to personally be involved in this particular decision.
Will you be making a recommendation on the Delaney Clause during the hearings beginning in Congress tomorrow?
I have spoken to Congressman Rogers, and we will be making recommendations concerning the Delaney Amendment. Whether they will come within this set of hearings is not clear and probably unlikely. I've asked the people in the department, the new people coming in, most concerned with this area, to look at this issue. And we will, and we'll have a recommendation, and that will be mine and the department's recommendation.
Would you identify for our listeners and viewers what the Delaney Amendment does?
The Delaney Amendment, Mr. Monroe, is an amendment which is considered to prohibit the FDA from clearing or permitting to be sold any food that, when ingested by a human being or an animal, if you will, causes cancer. There is great controversy over what that amendment actually means, and there's great controversy over whether or not it requires an instantaneous knee-jerk ban of a product. I would note that the Canadians who banned the saccharin banned it without any such provision in their law. They did apparently weigh the benefits and risks.
Ms. Simpson?
Mr. Secretary, the swine flu mass immunization program was a disaster from start to finish. And I have a two-part question. First of all, to find out whether your agency, given the same information as was given the agency a year ago, would have embarked upon such a program. And secondly, what are you going to do now that the American people have really become frightened by mass immunization programs? And what are you going to do if we have a similar vaccine in the future that might be necessary to be given to the people?
Ms. Simpson, I am not prepared to say what I would have done had I been in the government a year ago. It is not clear to me in what ways different decisions would have been made. I intend to look at that thoroughly and carefully because I think that kind of public health decision is one of the most difficult a secretary has to make. The greatest damage the swine flu program has done, aside from the human tragedy of the individuals paralyzed and killed, has been the impact on immunization programs, particularly for children. There are 16 million children in this country under the age of 14 who have not been immunized against polio, and a large part of that is attributable to the people's fear about the immunization programs. We've got to restore confidence. The first step we've taken has been to open up the entire process for selecting the vaccines for next year. We've done that. We haven't made the selections yet, but every fact that's relevant to that will be available to the public. We also intend to have a substantial stepped-up program of education for children and parents in the immunization area and to try and get the children of this nation immunized.
We have a bit less than 2 minutes. Mr. Secretary, many people are worried by the fact that the Social Security security system is expected to lose perhaps $5 billion this year, and the way things are going may go broke in the 1980s. I know that you're working out some plan to try to remedy this and may not be ready with specifics of that plan, but can you tell us the direction in which you're going? What are some of the alternatives?
Well, major objectives and one of the major instructions that the president has given to me is to make absolutely certain that the integrity of the Social Security system is preserved, and it will be. We are looking, there are two problems. One is a very short-run problem, roughly over the next 3 or 4 years, and we will be proposing to the Congress ways to take care of that. During the next within the next couple of months. There is a longer-run problem relating to the way in which benefits rise for those who are retired. We are looking at that problem now. Whether we'll be proposing this year methods to handle it or not is not clear.
We have about a minute, Ms. Hicks.
Yes, I wondered. President Carter campaigned on a promise to bring national health insurance to the American people. Does this still have a high priority, and if so, when might we expect a legislative draft?
This has a very high priority. I regard the Social Security issue, the welfare reform issue, the American family issue, and national health insurance as four central presidential priorities for me. We would expect to have legislation to the Congress next year. In this area, I will be recommending and working with the president on a program during this year.
Beginning of the year or end of the year?
I don't know whether it'll be the beginning or the end of the year. If President Carter continues the way he's going on other programs, it'll be the sooner the better and closer to the beginning of the year than the end of the year.
Mr. Craslow?
To pursue Mr. Monroe's question on Social Security, many millions of Americans are now paying more in Social Security taxes than they're paying in individual income taxes, and the figure is climbing. When is that trend going to be reversed?
Sorry, Mr. Craslow and Secretary Califano. I underestimated or overestimated our time possibilities. Our time is up. Thank you, Mr. Secretary, for being with us today on Meet the Press.